Hello, and welcome to another episode of Society. I'm Sam. And I'm also alone this week because Patrick is on his way to sunny Los Angeles and Lee is headed to Portugal by way of Nashville, which means it's up to me to introduce this episode for you today. So, apologies in advance. This week, Patrick and I sit down with Scott Whitehair, a veteran storyteller here in Chicago. He's helped shape the storytelling scene and help grow an organic community of storytellers across the city. Some of you might be thinking that storytelling is a very vague and loose term, which it is. It's different, though, from things like stand-up and improv, because these are where people get on stage, they tell a true story in an attempt to connect with their audience. So in that sense, it's a bit different than people just telling jokes or a stage production, in that it's just people telling stories. Now, Scott Whitehair has been involved with this for years, and he's founded some incredible shows, things like This Much Is True and Story Lab. He's participated in The Moth, and he's performed his stories around the city in a variety of different venues and shows. Scott also offers workshops where people can learn how to tell stories and better connect with their audiences, which is actually how we found him. Lee took a storytelling workshop and then said, we have to get him on the show. So, we did. Without further ado, here's our conversation with Scott Whitehair.
Scott Whitehair, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
That's good. We're excited to have you on and talk a lot about storytelling, but let's just start off with a pretty broad question before we really dive into your story of storytelling. But like, what does it mean to be a storyteller?
I think it means that you're human. Really, it's the most human thing that we do. As somebody who's spent the last 12 years doing this, teaching, producing, telling, I get the question quite a bit. You had to have met somebody who just can't do it, doesn't have the ability. And I haven't. It's something we can all do. Some of us work at it, consciously or not. And some of us maybe feel we're really good and aren't. don't really do anything with it to develop their voice. But you just have to be human. And maybe animals, I don't know. I don't know how to speak that language. But I can
plants
say,
maybe?
But from all indications are, it's the most human thing we do. So a storyteller is a person.
That was a much more amazing answer than I thought we were going to get right off the bat. Let's talk a little bit about yourself and how you came to Chicago and then how you kind of found the storytelling scene.
Sure. So I came here in 2005 just for more opportunity to live in a bigger city. I grew up in a small river town outside of Pittsburgh. It's always been my hometown, but Chicago is definitely my city. I love it here. I just came, for more of everything. And at the time I was interested in improv and I did some sketch stuff and it was cool. In a way, it was something, again, not a career path. I wasn't one of those people who came here and said, I'm going to be on SNL within 5 years. I was pretty realistic. I'm like, I'm going to have lots of fun and meet people and, learn how to do this. And so I was doing that and working some day jobs. A big turning point came about 12 years ago when I took a workshop at the Annoyance Theater. I was random. It was called Solo Performance. And I did not know what that meant. I was just picturing like unitards and glow sticks, some kind of weird, like solo performance. But I was looking for things to kind of break out of, the mold of what I've been doing. So I'm like, at the last minute, said, yeah, why not? It's a weekend thing. And it completely changed my life. It was personal narrative. It was taught by a woman named Paula Killen, who had lived in Chicago and had done a bunch of work here. And I was very successful out in LA. And she walked us through our stories and helped us craft them all weekend. And we got up on stage and did them for a packed house. And some of us were just blown away. We're like, this is a thing we can do. We should do it. And we didn't have a lot of experience doing that at all. So we were like, yeah, let's do it. And the next thing was like, how do we do it? And so we started putting on these shows, random places, never the same place twice, bookstores, coffee shops, bars. Often in front of very indifferent staff and an audience. We outnumbered our audience often 2-1 with the group. And they were friends, spouses, and people who were like, we will buy you beers afterwards. You come hear our stories. They're like, how long is that show? I mean, are these stories long? So we just started to do that. And eventually people started to come who we didn't know. And we were like, wow, how did that guy even know that we're doing this? From there, it kind of just grew and grew until point now where I'm producing 16 live events a month. I spend my days doing trainings and coaching, and I've managed to kind of make this how I spend most of my waking moments. And I'm thrilled. It was never a plan. It was never, I'm going to get into the storytelling game and rise to some top of some mountain and make the big storytelling bucks. I just kept doing it because I loved it and saw more opportunity and potential in this city with what we were all trying to do. And when things presented themselves as such as an opportunity to leave the day job, I was like, okay, that means more time for storytelling. And that's still why I do it. It hasn't morphed into, okay, now I'm in my career. It's the same stuff I was doing 12 years ago. It's just changed and sometimes I get paid for it.
When was the point when you decided to leave your day job and start doing this full time?
Well, that decision was somewhat made for me. I was working for a mortgage refinancing company that I won't name, but they have a ballpark named after them in the city. And I was the worst.
You worked for the Wrigleys?
Yes. I was the most worthless employee. Okay. I mean, I came in, but I didn't really have it. There were 2 months where I didn't have any work to do. And so I just made loose leaf tea and I was on the internet and I wrote. And finally I got nervous and I went to a manager, somebody in a different department. I wasn't even in the same room with my team. I don't even know if people knew I worked there anymore. And so I came in and I said, hey, you know, those reports you've been having, I haven't had one. Do you have any reports for me to do? And she looks at me and she goes, we don't use those anymore. We haven't used those in a long time. So I was worthless. I was everybody who came in after me rocketed into being loan officers, but they were there all day and all night making the big money and having zero lives. And eventually it caught up with me when they realized how pointless I was. They brought me in and I smiled and shook hands. I think they were shaken by the fact that I was not concerned or mad. Like I'm thanking them. I'm saying there's no explanation needed. You guys have work to do. Get back to work. So I went home and I'm like, okay, well, find another one of these day jobs. I'd been in the restaurant industry in the past. I thought maybe, you know, I wouldn't mind doing that and whatever I need to do. And I can still, I had started to do storytelling stuff, the corporate and training and nonprofit workshops and coaching during that time. I had been teaching an independent class for a couple of years, just on the side, you know, a little extra money. And I really enjoyed it. It was very fulfilling. But in my last year at that company, I started to take long lunches and shoot down to the loop and teach a quick storytelling workshop or, you know, take a half day and I would have a training thing. So it was there, but it wasn't steady enough. And so I went home and I'm like, I don't know if this is the time. People kept pushing me. Oh, you should try it. And it never felt like the right time. And I thought, well, I'm going to give it a few more weeks. And what happened in the meantime is I got a chance to go to Hong Kong and teach at a festival through a contact and friend that I'd had there. And I went there and had a great time. When I came back, I'm like, you know what? It's now. If it doesn't work, I'll go work brunch shifts. I'll find another office job. I'm sure I can do that. But I think this is the time. And that first year was, you know, really nerve-wracking. And there were times where, you know, I thought, was this a good decision? Wasn't it? But now it's 5 years into that phase of it. And it's been going really, really well. I've established myself, my style and my approach. And I feel like I've done it with integrity moving into that phase of it. That was important to me, that not to sell out everything that I do or change or forget what this is all about. It was just, I knew I would have to adjust it to do the business world and some of that stuff. But I was in no way going to trash my philosophies or what I believed in with this to make a buck. And so far I've been able to do both, which has been stunning. My dad was a mill worker and he used to tell us, you're not going to enjoy what you do at work. It's not going to be fun. It's not supposed to be. It's work. You go in and do it. And when you're done with work, you can enjoy the parts of your life outside of that. So I had no frame of reference for actually enjoying your job. And neither does he still. He says, well, what do you do? And I said, I'm a storyteller. And he goes, what do you do? Like, and finally I said, you know, hey, I have health insurance because I knew that was important. And he goes, well, okay then. So
classic.
But yeah, that was kind of
classic dad.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Classic dad move.
The important things.
12 years ago, you got into this. Can you give a little bit of like what that history is and a little bit more of the greater history of storytelling in Chicago at all? You said your friends and you decided that you wanted to keep trying and pursuing. So you just started making open mics, but there's probably an infrastructure of storytelling before that.
Yeah, but I'll say this wave of personal narrative was in its infancy here. There were some people, there was a theater company that was doing some form of it. It was much more scripted and formal, but they had been around for a few years. And of course it's storytelling, so everybody was doing some form of it, you know, whether it was a play or a sketch. But as far as the first person, you know, vulnerable, personal narrative connected with an audience, there wasn't, we didn't really have a role model. So, you know, we started doing our thing, when am I doing it? We found out eventually some other people had kind of got into a similar thing. So, you know, it was nice to have colleagues like, hey, you guys are doing this show. We'll come and do your show. We'll share performers with you and come and check us out. And we started to kind of grow together. What's nice about it is there's been so much room, not only on stage for people, but for people to create their own shows or their own vision to say, hey, you know, I want to hear stories about this. And they go make it, which is what's amazing about living in Chicago, because that's possible here. It's a city that encourages that. That's how it's grown. It's the inclusivity. That inclusivity has been a hallmark, and why it's grown, in my opinion, is there's room for everybody, one way or another. There's room for everybody to tell. There's room, obviously, for everybody to listen. There's room for people to make their own storytelling shows or projects or podcasts. So that's been what I've seen over 12 years, where the growth has come from.
I like that it's something that, to your point, the city encourages, and that there's room for that growth.
Oh, yeah. Chicago, I mean, visiting other cities, and people do great stuff in storytelling and in other avenues of, you know, artistic work, obviously, in so many different cities, New York and LA and Austin and Kansas City, and there's great stuff. But I've yet to see any place like Chicago where if you have a dream, you have, even if it's weird, you're like, I want to do this weird thing. If you want to do it and you are willing to put the work in to make it happen, it can happen. I've done shows in funeral parlors, a church. We did a liar's contest in a church once. People said, we'll never find a church. But we certainly did have people tell their biggest bullshit stories under a giant painting of Jesus. And I was like, clearly anything is possible in Chicago.
Why don't we talk about the stuff that you have started here in the city and kind of like, not necessarily your influence, but what you've contributed to the storytelling scene.
Sure. Well, I mentioned this much is true. It's still going on. And we've had, it's still fun.
Was that the first one?
That was Sorry the first to interrupt one. Yeah, again. 10 and a half years in, and every second Tuesday of the month, I'm like, oh, I can't wait.
And what does that kind of show look like?
So we get a mix. We get, it's a curated show, but it's curated from a wide pool. We have professional storytellers. We have people who've done a lot of the slams and are in this wave and, you know, having a lot of success in this wave of storytelling. We've had poets, writers, magicians, taxi drivers, just every possible mix we can get, as much as we can, as a representative of different backgrounds and people in Chicago coming in to share their stories. They generally have a little bit of experience with telling stories in whatever way, but so it's a curated show. Story Lab came out of that, and the Story Lab happened because people would come up after This Much Is True. They said, hey, I want to do this. So I said, let's make something where you can just do it, and you know, there's room for everybody. So Story Lab started, and the thing was, you had to see it so you knew what you were getting into. But if you saw it, you were qualified to do it. You signed up. It was free to do. There was a workshop with it, which still happens. And then they get up on stage, and over 600 people have done that, most with little to no experience, and nobody has failed. And then out of that, Do Not Submit is something I guess is worth mentioning. It started out as an open mic. I started with a friend because for a couple of reasons, we just wanted an opportunity for people to tell their stories. And we also wanted a place, quite frankly, to suck, because we had stand-up friends and they're like, well, we went to the, have you been to a stand-up open mic?
Unfortunately.
Circle of hell is that?
No, that's real.
No one's happy. Delivering it, hearing it, the staff, like we're all just knowing this is human misery
that's real.
4 hours. And why we kind of wanted that model for storytelling is it is key. If you can't tell the jokes that don't work, you're never going to tell the jokes that do. Same with stories. If you can't try out a story and find out what might not be working with it, your odds of telling the story that works for you and for the audience goes way down. We called it Obnoxiously Enthusiastic. It was open to anybody. Then when Powell's bookstore on Lincoln closed, they kind of went away for a while, and it kind of got combined with an idea for me. How can we spread more of this around and make it easier for people to do it? So when it came back initially, I think, as 9 to 10 open mics every month around the city. And now it's at 13. Some have come and gone. So we throw it at the wall and see what sticks. There are some venues that didn't quite work. Some mix, or the night, you know, or the time slot, whatever it was, it just didn't happen. But we keep doing it. It's spread to Champaign-Urbana, Elmhurst. I talked to a guy. He's like, "Can we do it in Miami?" And I'm like, "Sure." I'm never going to be able to make it. That's... The reason it exists and the reason that it's thrived is the hosts. We have these amazing hosts who show up every month. They show up and they make space for people, and they listen and they take care of people and support them. And without them, it would not exist. So I also love telling people too, because they don't realize it's so warm and fuzzy. When it started, it was super militant. I mean, if you think of the name, Do Not Submit, we're basically saying, like, people are telling you you can't be on stage at their show. Bullshit. Come here. The original logo was a fist that turned into a pen. People started to, like, that's a bit much. I'm like, well, we need to let them know we're not taking it. And now it still has that spirit, but it's more, hey, we're all going to get together and support each other.
Seems like this is a big kind of through current of support, and I don't want to say teaching, but like creating space for folks who might not otherwise have a space.
Yeah. You know, I think we're all trying to do that in this community. We know that it's better. The more voices we get, the more opinions, the more we get to learn from each other and step in each other's shoes. I know for me personally, a big part of the reason is, you know, growing up, I really wasn't told I could do anything with creativity besides, like, keep it down and, you know, stay out of trouble. And even as I got older, I kind of found that stuff. And I had people who inspired me and mentored me. But, you know, I would have loved to have more people saying, like, come, try this, do it. And so I feel, since I got that from people later, I feel a responsibility with resources I have and time I have to turn around and say, hey, you too, come on. Instead of gatekeeping, it's more like there's those of us holding the door open, saying, everybody get in here. We got room for everybody. We don't care who you are, get in. And it feels good to do that. And also, we all benefit from it. I've heard more stories probably than anybody you know in the last 10 years through
class. I believe that.
And you know what? It has incredibly enriched my life to learn about other people and how they've dealt with heartbreak or success or where they come from or where they're going. We had a 95-year-old World War II vet do the show, and his stories, I mean, I thought about for weeks afterwards.
What is the average participant look like? Like, what is these communities you've created? Who takes part in them?
Is there even an average, I guess?
You know, it's funny, on a national level, sometimes people talk about what's going on in Chicago, and I have some colleagues in different organizations, and they're like, oh, the young people, we got to get the young people involved. Here's the thing. It's not a young movement. It's a new movement. The impression is, oh, it's all millennials. No. Marvin, the 95-year-old World War II veteran, was one of our newest storytellers in the last year. He'd never done it. It's all different ages, all different backgrounds. We're still trying to widen that out. As you know, Chicago is a city that can be very divided. And a lot of the storytelling happens on the north side. It's kind of blossomed there. So, you know, there's an effort to try to thoughtfully, in an appropriate way that's respectful, spread that around and find people who want to continue to spread that. But most of it right now is on the north side. I hope that changes. I hope that people will pick that up and decide to make storytelling whatever it looks like to them in whatever community. The only trend I could say is that I notice it's often more women than men are involved. And, you know, there's different theories on that.
Toxic masculinity, being able to share your feelings.
Yes, I think part of it is maybe it's vulnerability.
Yeah, for sure.
It's and I've worked with guys before who are like, you know, I'll be like, we'd love to know what you felt in that story. And they're like, yeah, I don't really talk about how I feel. Like,
yeah, that's
well, this is a bigger problem than we can get into in our storytelling class, but that could account for some of that. But it really is everybody. And the thing is that we keep impressing upon people is it is for everybody. There's nothing that rules you out from that. I think it gets this rap sometimes, personal storytelling. But one of the things I hear most often is people like, you're a storyteller? You must love NPR. And I'm like, not especially. It's fine. Why do you assume? And they assume that's where I got into storytelling. Yep. And that's what I'm all about. And that's the kind of story I like to tell. I tell them, like, you know, more than that, my inspiration was the guys who'd hang out in the corner bar in Western PA up the street from my place.
When I first was learning about storytelling 5 years ago in the storytelling community and all the different things that go on, to me, it did feel like it was oversaturated. But you're saying you still feel like there's still tons of room to grow. With all these different things going on, is that helpful to the storytelling community or hurtful?
I mean, to put it simply, my opinion is more storytelling is great. Doesn't matter how it happens. If we have a show, I don't think it's going to damage anything. I don't think it's going to crowd anybody out. If anything, the more there is, you know, it keeps you on your toes. If you're producing a show and there's a lot of shows and you want people in your audience, well, then you got to produce it well and take care of your audiences and take care of your performers and try things. So I think that's great for everybody. Also, I think I'd love to see more innovation, and I think that'll come. I think there's a lot of learning from each other. And then, you know, there have been different formats. You can find your audience and your storytellers.
How would you say, though, with everyone participating, I think you alluded to it a little bit earlier, but there's got to be room for improvement as well, you know,
in the telling of a story.
Yeah. Well, maybe not in this telling of the story, but also just like in the way that these events are made accessible, like you were talking about earlier. What are the ways that you would like to see the storytelling community improve, even in a perfect world here in the city?
As far as improving, I don't know. Again, I'd like to see more innovation. I'd love to see people try things and, you know, not try things like here's a gimmick or a new theme. But like really try things. And we haven't heard all the experiences that people have had, any individual or any group of people. So I think that is, we can continue to widen that net and give people opportunities. You know, as far as improving it, I think it's just making more opportunities and trying things. It's totally fine. I've tried things that have absolutely failed, both as a story on stage or projects. And I've been cool. Well, that I learned from that. It didn't quite work, at least right now.
Yeah, it seems like the act of telling a story is in itself an act of self-reflection. So it seems like a community that would encourage kind of self-growth and
yeah.
I don't know, maturation, I guess.
I can't stress enough, though, because I've heard and I've read a couple times, this has been quoted from various people in the press who were talking about it. It is not for you telling the story. And that's a big knock on personal narrative. And it's frustrating when I hear that. And I get why sometimes that's said. But it's not getting up and it's therapy. It's not. It can be therapeutic, absolutely, and maybe should be, but it's not therapy. You're not saying it for you. You will get the benefit of expressing yourself and getting out there, but you're trying to share it with somebody else who it might mean something to, even if they can catch a glimpse of your life or see themselves in it. So self-reflection is big in the process of crafting it and deciding what resonates with you and what you'd like to share when you have the chance. But when it comes to the telling, it's not about you anymore. When I read that or hear that, like, well, I tell people just to tell the story they want to tell. Sure, you should, but also you're not telling it for you. It's, I say this every month at shows, at the end of the show when I thank the audience for coming. I tell them without an audience, storytelling is extremely weird. You're just talking to yourself. What's the point? It's about communicating. It's about framing your experiences, finding something that resonates with you, something that speaks to you, and trying to share it in a way with somebody where they can see themselves in it or understand somebody who's not like them or see a different experience. And we always have that basic common humanity to connect on. I don't want to see storytelling get the reputation of masturbation. And it can get that. Yeah. If you're up there parading yourself around like, listen to this. Isn't it amazing you get to hear this? If you have that attitude, yeah, stay home or find a bar. Tell that to somebody who's half asleep. And you're not really bothering anybody or putting anybody out.
So what is next for you and kind of your communities that you've created?
You know, it's funny. I always have some ideas and I'm always looking at, again, ways to try something innovative or different or make more opportunities. But really, you know, I get that a question a lot with Story Lab, or this much is true. People pull me aside and they'll go, so what do you want to do with this? And I'll say, come back next month and do it again. And they're like, no, but like, what's your plan? I like what it is. There's always ways to find little things to tweak, but like those specific things, do not submit. I'd love to see more of them if people are interested in taking on that role as a host and making things happen. Story Lab, I want to see 6 more people get up on stage and take a risk and connect. This much is true. I want to get together with an interesting group of people and tell each other stories. You know, in my own career, with things I'd love to see in the world, you know, I always have ideas and things kick around. And really, with the existing projects, I just want to see them continue and I want to see them be of value to people.
That's great.
Yeah. And make $1 million.
No, I'm just kidding. No.
I think that's the answer people would love. When they ask me that question, they pull me aside. Like they would go, good, go get them. Like that would make more sense.
We need 1 billion listeners on NPR.
Yeah, I want a giant story throne and be pretty. No.
David Sedaris will be nothing.
I want David Sedaris brought to me and driven to his knees to hear my. No, I just want to keep doing it, you know? And have fun with it. And again, we're in my opinion, the best city in the face of the planet, just in general. And it's a great place to tell stories and hear them. So
let's say someone wants to get involved. They listen to this show and they're like, you know what? I think I would like to try telling a story, but I absolutely have nowhere to start. I'm not sure if I could even get on stage yet. Like, what should they do? Like, how does that process kind of look like for those people?
Well, I'd say, for one, just, you know, you only need one person's permission to tell your stories, and that's your own. So start with that. Give yourself permission and then see what makes sense to you. Often people will say to me, should I start with the class? And I guess that would be a great sales pitch for me, but really, if it makes sense to them, that's awesome. Come take the class. I think there's a lot of value there. But also I tell people, you don't need to do that. Go to the open mic, put your name on the list. Get up and tell that shaky story and you're not sure and you're sweating and breathing heavy. And then when you do it again, it'll be a little bit easier. There's no shortcut for any of that. You'll never stop developing your voice and you'll never stop developing your stories or finding new stories you want to develop. So I'd tell people to get started. And if that's an open mic, go do it. As far as my own classes go, I can say it is not a class to tell you how to tell your stories. Because as we discussed, you already know that. It's a chance to experiment with tools, techniques, tips, tricks in an environment with other people doing the same thing where no one's judging you and to take those chances and, you know, continue to develop your voice. It's a class where you actually do the thing you're there to learn instead of, you know, getting 3 seconds amidst, you know, 100 other people in the class. And it's in my living room. So, you know, if that's a selling point, you get to see how I live. Whether that's interesting, horrifying, or it doesn't mean anything to you.
If there's anything you'd like to say to just like the greater storytelling community, what would you like to say? Like, what would you say if you had the opportunity to just get it out there, one thing or something like that?
To like the Chicago community?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Oh, I'd say I'd keep it up. I look forward to hearing more stories from you. That's it. Take care of each other. That's it. And I think people are already doing that, so they don't need to hear that.
I don't know. I think people always like to hear encouraging words, no matter what's going on.
Oh, and I'd also say, I want $1 million.
Oh, there you go. There it is.
If you know David Sedaris, bring him here.
Yes, I want to. You guys to listen to my stories.
Has your dad seen you tell the story?
No.
Oh.
No. I'm very careful.
Okay.
My dad, I think my dad would enjoy this. And he's heard some stuff online.
Sure.
My dad's retired and he treats the internet like his like morning paper. Just go. I've caught him before like looking at Craigslist and he's like, look at, they're selling this engine for this old Camaro. And I'm like, are you thinking about buying a Camaro? He's like, no, but look how much it costs. He's just browsing the internet.
Okay. I think we have the same father, yeah. By the way.
But he will, you know, I'll say, oh, I got this coming up. And he's like, I know. I checked your site. And I'm like, oh, I have to be careful with what's online. Any stories you're putting online, you know, they're vulnerable in your life. And there's some that you're vulnerable in a room sharing with people. And there's some that you don't, I'm like, I don't want this on the internet at large for just anybody. Also, I'd love for my mom and my dad to hear a story. But my dad, I remember from my improv days when we used to do stuff in New Kensington, Pennsylvania, small town, we would be in this little bar. My dad afterwards would say, I really enjoyed that. It was really funny. But he had a stone face during a lot of it. And I would look at him and I'd be like, oh, God, you're just grimacing. And then afterwards he'd say it was very funny. And I'm like, why did you look like someone was trying to murder you?
I think that about wraps it up. Is there anything we missed or you want to, you know,
yeah, when are
on?
The two of you going to come and tell a story? Because like, you now have that firsthand information.
That's true.
So you could commit. Wow. You could lead by example by just promising me on this podcast that's going out to all these people that you'll show up and come to an open mic.
I solemnly swear that Lee Tennant will.
Nice.
Lee already
nice
owes
deflect.
Me. Lee already nice owes deflect. Me a story, but I'm trying to get you two on the hook too. So, I mean, you could, if you don't want to say it, I guess you could not lead by example.
I will do it. Pat, are you in?
Oh God. Yeah. I mean, it's going to be totally out of my element because my entire life has been behind a microphone, but sure.
This would be not a microphone too. There'll just be more people
there's
than just
people
me
staring at me. I can't watch a radio board.
All right. Well, this is the first time a guest has challenged us.
Yeah.
And I very much appreciate it. Scott,
I absolutely will leave. I will leave a comment on when this is posted that confirms whether you've done it or not.
Okay.
Oh, God.
Just in case you think like, well, there's no way they will ever know. Oh, they will know one way or another.
Well, this has been an exciting dare to end our show. Scott Whitehair, thank you so much for coming on. This was a fantastic talk about storytelling.
I really appreciate you having me. Thanks for your interest. And, you know, I love this stuff, so it's a pleasure to get to talk about it.
Thank you again to Scott for being on the show, and thank you, I guess, for challenging Patrick and myself to participate in a storytelling event. We're definitely going to make good on this promise, and we'll keep you, the listener, and you, Scott, posted on when and where we tell our story. So if you're interested, you can come out and watch us get on stage and nervously sweat in front of a bunch of people. I can't promise it'll be pretty, but hopefully it'll be fun. If you're interested in seeing storytelling events or taking a class with Scott, check out his website at scottwhitehair.com. Here you'll find calendars for all of his storytelling workshops and events, as well as news from around the storytelling community here in Chicago. And before I go, I also want to say a special thanks to everybody who came out and watched our live event at Koval Distillery. It was a great conversation, it was a great audience, and it was some really great whiskey. If you like what you hear, please check us out at society.com. You can find news, updates from past communities, as well as previous episodes that we've had. You can tweet at us at societypod on Twitter. You can find us on Instagram at society, or you can shoot us an email at societypodcast@gmail.com. If you have ideas, if you have other communities we should talk to, or if you just want to shoot the shit, send us an email. That's pretty much all. I guess now I'm going to go try to think of a story to tell. I'm Sam, and I'm still alone sitting in my living room. Thanks for listening.